Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip we just heard was from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and that's coming out this weekend, the latest from Marvel and their build-up to Avengers Infinity War. And this is the sequel to, I believe it was 2014 that Guardians of the Galaxy came out. And you remember at the time, that was the movie that Marvel, I think, was actually kind of worried about. I think that was the film where they were like, okay, we're taking a bunch of characters that nobody's ever heard of, and we're putting them on this, or we're putting them out in this movie with a bunch of untested stars. Chris Pratt had never been a box office hit, never been a box office draw or anything. Zoe Saldana, who people knew from, you know, other franchises, but not, but she was not the centerpiece. The movies that she had been the centerpiece weren't hits. You know, Dave Bautista. And the most recognizable names in the movie, Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel, you never saw them on screen. You just heard their voices. So I think Marvel was actually kind of concerned about Guardians of the Galaxy at the time. And you know, obviously, they had nothing to worry about in the end. People love Guardians of the Galaxy. And I kind of came around late to it. I watched it the first time and thought it was, you know, pretty good, but not great. And then I went to see it again, and I was like, damn, this is actually really, really fun. I'm really digging this movie right now. So you know, I was a latecomer to the movie, and that's fine. But I do love Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'll let you know whether or not I liked Volume 2 just as much. In just a minute, when Matthew Razak calls in, he's one of the creators of Flixsys.com. He'll be joining me to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. In just a moment, at least I hope he will. He's supposed to, and he knows he's supposed to. So hopefully he should have called in by now. So hopefully he will. Now, this is going to be sort of an abbreviated show anyway. So even if he doesn't call in, I can handle it myself. But it's going to be an abbreviated show because yesterday I gave you guys an interview with Oren Moverman. The writer and director of The Dinner, which stars Richard Gere, Steve Coogan, Rebecca Hall, and Laura Linney. So I give you that interview. If you haven't checked that out, go back into our archives. Go really far back, as far back as yesterday, and you'll see it. So go back and check out that interview with Oren Moverman. We talk a lot about the film, which is about two couples having a testy dinner conversation. We talk a lot about Trump and, you know, that movie was supposed to be Cate Blanchett's directorial debut until Moverman kind of took over. So a lot of stuff we touched upon, his relationship with working relationship with Richard Gere. They've worked with each other on a few movies at this point, and why they seem to get along so well. So check out that interview with Oren Moverman. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. And, you know, I appreciate those of you who already have checked it out. So anyway, yeah, so this will be a sort of a shortened show because of that. So you can go check that part of it out. Anyway, let me check up on Rasek real quick and make sure that he's calling. Give him a heads up. Be sure to check that out. I want to thank everybody who has been liking us on Facebook, not just Cinema Royale, which I do appreciate that, but also Critical, the Movie Critics Network, which you can also find here on Blog Talk Radio, which is a collection of, I think, the country's best film critics and the best podcasts all together in one place. You just go to blogtalkradio.com/critical and you can find us all there. Or you can find us on Facebook. I think you just type in Critical and it'll pop up. I don't know what else Critical would pop up if you type that in on Facebook. But definitely go and check out critical.com. I'm hoping to have the Movie Minute's Joanna Langfield on soon to join us because she hasn't been on here in a while. And I keep saying I'm going to have some of the guys from the After Movie Diner on here. Or I want them to have me on their show because their show might be more fun than mine. So, because they talk about some far out stuff that I wouldn't think of. So yeah. Hold on 1 second while I double check on Rasek and make sure that he's calling in. The wonders of live radio. Gotta love it. And this is why I hate having guests on the show. I might do something about that in the future. I'm not quite sure what yet, but I hate having guests. With the exception of like Chris Bumbray and a couple of others who are always reliable, I don't like having guests on the show. I'd prefer to have somebody with me every week to talk about these movies. So I'm thinking there is a chance that I could do a bit of retooling on Cinema Royale at some point in the near future to maybe bring on a guest host, not a guest host, but a co-host who could do the show with me regularly, because I can't stand asking guests to be on the show and then they don't show up like this. It doesn't happen often, but it happens enough that I hate it. And this is one of those times that I hate it. This is one of those times where it really bugs me because it's Guardians of the Galaxy. So how are you going to forget to call in for Guardians of the Galaxy? Anyway, you know what? I'm not going to wait for him. I'm going to go ahead and jump in and just get started talking about it because why not? Well, anyway, so Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is once again written and directed by James Gunn. He's got full writing duties on this one this time. Last time he worked from a script co-written by Nicole Perlman. And I think she's been busy working on Captain Marvel. So she did not do this one. But anyway, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is a lot like what you saw in the first movie. I'm not going to lie. There are certain things that are the same. The irreverent tone, the offbeat tone are the same. The attitude is the same. But what I like about what James Gunn did here is that he moves all of his characters a step forward, which is what every sequel should do. A sequel should not bring the characters back in the same place that they were in the first movie. Otherwise, you're just getting the first movie. These characters are in a different place. The film opens in this awesome scene. The first scene is amazing. It's basically one big battle. You heard a clip from it right at the beginning of the show where the team is facing off against this giant tentacle monster who is trying to devour some batteries that belong to this perfected race known as the Sovereign. And it's basically set up over the opening credits, but it's Baby Groot dancing around to the sounds of a soundtrack that was set up by Rocket, who in this movie is far more self-destructive than he was in the first movie. He was in the first one as well, but in this one, it's almost irritatingly so. So, and it actually rubs Star-Lord the wrong way, which, you know, he's sort of irresponsible himself. So in this movie, he's taking on more of a leadership role. You can tell that right from the beginning. That's a step forward, or in the case of Rocky, maybe you could call it a step backwards. They're not in the same place they were. Drax is still crazy, but he's also more open. And I think that's because he's closer to these people than he was in the first movie. And Zoe Saldana as Gamora, she is, well, she's still got, there's still some sexual tension between her and Star-Lord. Even right from the beginning, you can tell that. But the opening scene is brilliant. It's brilliant, and it shows how Gunn is using this movie to kind of test out new visual techniques, new styles. And that's what this movie, this second movie, kind of feels like, a way for James Gunn to experiment. These are good things. He does some new things visually, especially when he goes to some of the other planets, like Ego's planet. Now, Ego turns out to be the father of Star-Lord. He's played by Kurt Russell. Now, this is not a spoiler. This has been all over the teasers and the trailers anyway, so everybody knows he is Peter's father, Peter Quill's father. So with that mystery gone, there's not that much of a plot to speak of. And, you know, some people will like that. The first movie didn't have much of a plot either, and this one probably has even less of one. But what it has is a whole lot of wind-up before it gets to the pitch. There are a lot of balls in the air here, and most of it centers on fathers and sons, friends and family, you know, and those the bonds that tie them all together. So you've got Peter, who learns that his father is Ego, this all-powerful celestial being who has his own planet, or is his own planet, really. But you also have Peter's adoptive father, Yondu, played by Michael Rooker, who is amazing in this movie. Now, Yondu is a member of the Ravagers, of course, so was Peter Quill, Star-Lord, at one point. He's facing down a mutiny within the Ravagers because they feel like he's been too soft on Star-Lord. So we know why. Obviously, he cares about the kid more than he's been letting on. All his threats of wanting to eat him, whatever. We know that's all. That's all just bluster. But, you know, he's facing down a mutiny because of his adoptive son. You got more family drama. You got Gamora and her sister Nebula, played by Karen Gillan. Nebula is basically in tow with the team as they decide what to do with her. And then you got other drama. You know, you got Baby Groot and Rocket dealing with his nonsense. So you've got a lot of stuff going on here. You've got the Sovereign who are chasing down the team because of something Rocket does. I'm not going to say what he does. So you've got a lot of stuff going on here. And that is basically what the movie is. It's a lot of chess pieces being moved around, but not much of a central story. The big question is whether or not Ego is everything Star-Lord wants him to be. And, of course, Star-Lord has grown up hearing that his father was from outer space, but he envisions him as being, you know, this great big hero, a la David Hasselhoff in Knight Rider. You know, and the question is whether or not that is actually true. Now, of course, we find out, but not until maybe not the last 20, 30 minutes of the movie. The rest of the movie is a lot of setup. Now, a lot of that setup is fun. You know, you get a great scene in this snowy planet where the Ravagers are kind of winding down when there's all these glowing robotic call girls that the team is hanging out with. It just looks beautiful. It's like nothing else we've seen from a Marvel movie. This is probably the most beautiful Marvel movie we've seen because it doesn't have that same homogenized look as the other Marvel movies do. And the same goes for when they get on Ego's planet, which I said looks like the Garden of Eden, you know, if you were on crack or the Garden of Eden on acid. That's Ego's planet. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And that's a credit to James Gunn and the production designer and the cinematographer, whose names I do not remember off the top of my head. But the movie stands out amongst Marvel's slate by far. It is absolutely brilliant. Now, I do feel like Gunn goes a little bit overboard with the use of the soundtrack stuff. it gave the first movie a nice touch. I think he relies on it a little bit heavily here. And he also relies a little too much on Baby Groot to kind of smooth over scenes that aren't going very far. There are some scenes that kind of drag things down a little bit. And whenever that happens, you kind of know Baby Groot's going to do something really cute. And he is unbearably cute to kind of make the scene go better, make the scene go down better. And I think he still relies on that stuff a little bit too much. I'm curious to see what he does in the next movie with Groot. Vin Diesel has talked about the fact that we have not seen a fully grown Groot yet. Like, the Groot we saw in the first movie was not the fully grown Groot, which makes me think we're going to see this huge, monstrous Groot in the third movie. I'm not spoiling anything by telling you that Baby Groot survives, okay? I think you know that, too. but there are little things like that that are kind of annoying. And again, the movie kind of follows the same path as the first movie. But like I said, the characters moving forward is what keeps it feeling fresh. It doesn't feel like they're retreading the same steps over and over again. So I like that. And then in essence, I like this movie. It's as much fun as the first one was. I still have the same issues with the first movie as I have with this one. You know, it's not perfect. It's kind of shaggy. It's kind of loose. You know, it doesn't feel like it's all going to come together until it finally does. So, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, yes, it's a thumbs up. Yes, you're going to want to go see it. And yes, you're going to want to go see it twice. And you're going to want to pack a lunch. It's kind of a long movie. It's over 2 hours, well over 2 hours. And it also has 4 post-credit scenes. Now, I went to a early screening of it, which had 4 post-credit scenes. We've heard that there's actually 5. And I'm guessing that there's probably the 5th one that is being saved for those who bought the tickets, who buy tickets. So if you've gone to see it in theaters, you know, you bought your ticket, and you see the fifth scene, shoot me a line over at punchdrunkcritics.com@yahoo.com, and let me know what it is, because I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to see it twice. I do want to see it again, and I definitely will at some point, but it's going to be a while. So if you see what that final post-credit scene is, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. All right, so that's my review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to call Matt Razak. Then I'm going to shoot a virus over to Flixes.com and shut that place down. but I'll be back on the other side to talk about Blu-rays and DVDs and news. I'll be right back.
We don't believe you, cause we the people are still here in the rear, yo, we don't need you. You ain't a killing off good young nigga move. When we get hungry, we eat the same fucking food, the ramen noodle. This simple voodoo is so maniacal, reliable to pull a juju. The irony is that this bad bitch in my lap, she don't tell me she make money, she don't study that. She gon' give it to me, ain't gon' tell me none of that. She gon' take the brain to where the place she sit on that. But don't sign with it, don't try to rhyme with it. VH1 has a show that you can waste the time with. Guilty pleasure takes the edge off reality. And for a salary, I'll probably do that just sporadically. The OG Gucci boots are smitten with honor. The IRS will honestly and make it gain common.
All right, Tribe Called Quest. Still love them, man. All right, let's talk about what's coming out on Blu-ray and DVD. This will be Tuesday, May 9th. And not a lot coming out this week. They've had a couple of big weeks with a lot of new releases. But this Tuesday, there's practically nothing. There's only 2 new movies. And neither one of them is one that I would say you need to run out and get. The first is 50 Shades Darker, the sequel to 50 Shades of Grey. Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson are back as the 2 characters from that trashy novel that I can't I never read and never will. now this one found them getting into a little well
I guess appropriately, darker territory. As he deals with a mysterious presence from his past, they embark on another relationship. And it's just as ridiculous as the first one was. Ridiculous and unbelievable, because to me it's always like, if an ugly dude did the shit that Christian Grey does in these movies, Anastasia would call the cops. But because he looks like Jamie Dornan, it's all good. It's all good. The dialogue is campy. The dialogue is corny. Their situations are unbelievable. They don't. They lack human logic, is the way I would put it. They lack any sort of sense of human logic at all. So, 50 Shades Darker is out there. If you liked it, hey, I took my friend Jen to see 50 Shades Darker, and she liked it. You know, she's a novelist, though. She writes stuff like 50 Shades, and she reads that stuff constantly. So, you know, if you dig that stuff, hey, man, more power to you. It just ain't for me. And the other new movie is A Street Cat Named Bob, which is based on a true story of a homeless man who takes in a cat, and it changes his life. I saw this and reviewed it for the site a few months ago. It's perfectly cute and harmless, but I'd be damned if I could think of anything to really that stands out about it. You know, I think it's a perfectly good family movie. A family would like it, but I don't think there's anything memorable about it. And a couple of updated transfers, Heat, Chinatown, and The Godfather are all out on Blu-ray this week in new special editions. So if you haven't got any of those in your Blu-ray shelf yet, then I don't know where you've been. You should have been had them up there. But if you haven't, if you've been waiting for like a better transfer, then I guess now is the time to go and pick those up. All right, let's move on to news. Got a few things here that caught my eye. Logan. The awesome Logan, directed by James Mangold, Hugh Jackman's final time as the clawed Wolverine. It's coming back into theaters on May 16th. Why? It's getting a black and white run, just like Mad Max Fury Road. Ooh-wee. Now, look, this is pretty cool. James Mangold, I think, has always been hinting at this. The first images we saw from Logan were all done in black and white. We kind of figured that it was because the movie was taking a harder edge, you know, being R-rated. But it's really appropriate for a movie that kind of feels like an old school Western. So it's perfect for that. And I'm dying to see this in black and white. I don't often go see movies twice, you know, even if they re-release something that I love, I rarely will go. I want to see Logan in black and white. So I'm going to go and check that out. So that's coming out on May 16th. In the black and white runs. That's soon. That's in 2 weeks. Definitely going to check that out. Ben and Casey Affleck may take on Triple Frontier. Now, Triple Frontier is a movie that I think I talked about maybe a couple of weeks ago. Because it was one of those movies that had been around forever. It started out as a project from Kathryn Bigelow and Mark Boal, the duo behind Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker. And it follows the dangerous drug trade on the border between Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil. And the movie's always had a ton of great talent behind it. Like, the original cast was meant to be like Will Smith, and Johnny Depp, and Tom Hanks. Well, two out of those three are great. The other one is Johnny Depp. That whole thing kind of fell through, but then J.C. Chander picked it up. J.C. Chander, the fantastic director behind All Is Lost and Margin Call. And he had a cast of Tom Hardy, Channing Tatum, and Mahershala Ali, who just won Best Supporting Actor for Moonlight. But Paramount dropped it recently. You know, we've chronicled the tons of financial problems they've had over the last couple of years, all the failures, all the box office duds. And they got cold feet about Triple Frontier, so they dropped it. Well, now Netflix is looking at picking it up, which makes sense because Netflix has become sort of the home for mature dramas that probably wouldn't find an audience on the big screen, like the movie Sandcastle, which just came out on Netflix maybe about a week ago. You can find that review on punchdrunkcritics.com right now. But they've become a home for that sort of thing. So they're eyeing Triple Frontier right now. They may pick it up. And if they do, Ben Affleck and Casey Affleck would star in it. They would replace Tatum and Hardy, while Ali continues to stay on board. Now, I kind of hope that happens. I love Mahershala Ali. I'm a big fan of Ben Affleck and Casey Affleck. And we haven't seen them in a movie together in a very long time. We haven't seen them in a movie together, I think, since Super Cigarettes. And I'm pretty sure that was, what, 2000? Maybe 1999? I mean, they worked together before. Obviously, on Gone Baby Gone, which Affleck directed and which Ben directed and Casey started. But they haven't been together on screen. Now, considering the nature of this movie, which, like I said, it follows the drug war, it kind of sounds like a Traffic or Syriana type thing. Maybe they won't share the screen together here either. But I want this to happen because I want this movie to happen. This sounds like too good of a story. It's still got Bull's screenplay. And there's a reason why Bigelow was attached to it. She obviously liked it. So I'm hoping that movie happens because it sounds too good. It sounds too good to just disappear. I really don't want that to happen. This is sad news right here. Neil Blomkamp's Alien movie. A couple years ago, he kind of set the internet on fire when he started talking about an Alien movie, an Alien sequel that he wanted to do. And it kind of picked up traction to the point where 20th Century Fox and Ridley Scott were actually going to make it. Now, this was a movie that was going to take place after Aliens. And pretty much ignore everything that happens in Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection. And fans wanted that. They wanted Sigourney Weaver's Ellen Ripley back. They wanted Michael Biehn's character back. They wanted all of that. And fans were legitimately excited. More excited than they were for what Ridley Scott was doing with Prometheus and now Alien Covenant. And I think that rubbed Ridley Scott the wrong way. Because this is his franchise. This is his baby. He started this whole thing with Aliens. And I think that kind of pissed him off because Blomkamp's movie got pushed back, delayed, until Scott was finished with what he was doing. He's got like 5 movies with this whole Alien Covenant thing. So he's going to be on this thing for a while. So Blomkamp's movie's delayed. And now Scott has made comments basically saying that this movie's not going to happen. He's basically saying that Blomkamp's movie's dead. We kind of got an inkling of this a few months ago when Blomkamp said that the chances of his movie happening were slim to none. And this, I think this pretty much puts a nail in its coffin, which is sad because, I mean, look, we don't know if the movie would have been good or not, but fans were legitimately excited about it. And that's why I'm kind of sad to see it go. You know, that sort of thing doesn't happen organically anyway. But I also note that Blomkamp hasn't had a great film since District 9. He just hasn't. Chappie? Nope. And I would say that, I would also note that Fox and Scott kind of turning heel on this thing happened right around the time that Chappie came out and bombed. So maybe that has more to do with it than anything else. And finally, just to kind of show how silly the internet can be. I mean, it's not silly, but it is silly. So Josh Gad recently hit Twitter and he posted a photo of the Penguin, the classic Batman villain, who everybody knows from the 1960s series and from Danny DeVito playing him in Batman, Batman Returns. And he's kind of the lead villain in Gotham every week. But the Penguin is one of the most famous Bat villains around. He posted a picture of the Penguin, which had everybody asking, is Josh Gad telling us he's going to play the Penguin in The Batman, Matt Reeves' film? Maybe. Nobody knows. It may have just been Josh Gad posting a picture that he liked. It's a great picture, the one that he posted. I can't remember who drew it. It looks like David Fincher. But not David Fincher. Is it? Not David Fincher. David Finch? David Finch. Getting my directors and my comic book artists mixed up. But he posts the photo, and it's like, it's a great photo. It doesn't automatically mean that he's saying, hey, man, I'm playing a Penguin. Now, look, sometimes this stuff pans out. You know, sometimes these tweets pan out. Sometimes it means something. first time we heard about Deathstroke the Terminator being played by Joe Manganiello was from a tweet. So, I mean, it does happen, but more often than not, it's just somebody posting a photo. I post a lot of photos. It doesn't mean more than anything other than that I like that picture. So, I don't know. It could mean something. It could be a lot of things. It doesn't necessarily even have to do it with the Batman. He could be voicing the Penguin in one of the DC animated movies that comes out, one of the handful of those that comes out every year. He could be doing anything. So I don't know, man. It's all a little premature. And if Josh Gad is actually going to be playing the Penguin, we're going to find out soon enough from Warner Brothers. Now, that movie is not going to start shooting until early next year because Matt Reeves is still, I think he's still on post on War for the Planet of the Apes. And he's contractually bound to keep working through on that for at least another month or two, I think. So we're not going to see anything on the Batman for a while. And that script got completely started over, which is why we don't even know if Joe Manganiello's Deathstroke is going to even appear in the movie. They might start over from scratch. Now, they might start over from scratch and decide to make the Penguin the villain, in which case, hey, maybe Josh Gad is telling us something early. But there's no way Warner Brothers would allow him to do that so early, considering what just happened with the Batman. I mean, they just went if they did, they just start over everything. So why would they go ahead and spill the beans on something early and run the risk of having to do the same thing over and over again? It would be silly. So we'll find out. We'll find out eventually, but calm down, people. Just calm down. And that's all the news I got. And that pretty much ends our show. Wow, 30 minutes. I told you it'd be a short one. But we didn't have our guest. So I got to do everything solo, which is fine with me. I kind of like it that way sometimes. I had to deal with anybody else. And for the record, I did hear from Matt Rezek, and he has a pretty darn good reason for missing out. So I'm not going to hate on him too much. But anyway, I'm going to start to wrap up the show. Boom! There it is. Thanks, everybody, for joining me on this abbreviated solo edition of Cinema Royale, where I gave you my review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Read my thoughts even further over on punchdrunkfix.com. And that's it. I will see you next week, where I will be talking about King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Oh, my God, that was awful. And Snatch with Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn. I'm actually looking forward to that one. So, thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Cinema Royale. Check me out on Critical, the Movie Critics Network, and on Blog Talk Radio. Talk to you later. Goodbye.